Seeking mental health care can be overwhelming and even scary, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Dr. Josephine McNary, and I'm committed to making this process easier for you. Each week, my expert guest and I unravel a different form of therapeutic intervention in order to bring comfort and understanding and to help you get back to your true self. Hi, and welcome to Mind Stories. Today, I have the pleasure to talk with Dr. Hillary Adams. Dr. Adams is a licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in treating children to young adults and their families using techniques backed by science. Using treatments including cognitive behavioral therapy and applied behavioral analysis, Dr. Adams offers warm, effective, collaborative therapy and assessment services in downtown Los Angeles. She has extensive training with individuals on the autism spectrum, and she treats anxiety, sleep problems, behavior problems, tics, emotional regulation problems, social deficits, and more. Dr. Adams completed her undergraduate degree at Tulane University and PhD at Louisiana State University. She completed her postdoctoral training at Children's Hospital New Orleans. She is also affiliated with Children's Hospital Los Angeles, where she does web-based outreach as an autism expert. Hello, and welcome to our next episode of Mind Stories. Today, I have the pleasure of having Dr. Hillary Adams be part of our podcast. Dr. Adams is a child psychologist in downtown Los Angeles, as well as at this point offering video sessions with patients. Welcome, Hillary.
Hi, everyone.
So you want to tell us a little bit about your practice and the type of clients you work with?
Of course. So I have a background in what's called applied behavior analysis, as well as cognitive behavioral therapy. So applied behavior analysis is essentially the science of learning. It's kind of looking at behavior and figuring out what is the purpose and communication value in the behavior to figure out how to intervene best. So I do that, and also cognitive behavioral therapy, which is the kind of number one therapy, research-based therapy for anxiety and depression and other mood issues. And I work with individuals from about 18 months to young adults. So I see families, parents for parent training, and I do individual therapy as well with a variety of clients. My main specialty areas are autism spectrum disorder and anxiety. But I see kind of a general, I have more of a general practice right now.
Got it. Yeah. And I know we had originally thought about talking about Asperger's and the treatment of that, but given the change in times and different needs and questions that people might have about how to manage children at home and juggle kind of your lives in isolation, why we decided together that that would probably be a better topic. Absolutely. I know that you recently created a webinar for parents. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it is called A Psychologist's Perspective on Surviving Social Distancing with Your Kids. And essentially, I'm going over what I think is most important from a research-supported standpoint or perspective of what to be doing during this time to kind of best serve you, but also best serve your children. I think it's really important that parents and caregivers are focusing on self-care in addition to best practices for their kids. So I talk a lot about those different topics.
Got it. So what have you noticed with the clients you see now that you have to now move them over to video sessions? What are some themes of challenges that parents are dealing with their children, especially parents whose children are already anxious or have a baseline anxiety disorder? What are you seeing?
That's a great question. So I started doing my video sessions only on this past Monday. And I think what I found is that it is really dependent on the child. So some of my patients who are teenagers are actually really liking this new change. They're doing well with online school. There's less social pressure. I think, you know, especially for those kids with ADHD, this is a little bit harder. So, and especially with depression too, I think, you know, being stuck inside and not being able to do those behavioral activation tips that I'm recommending for them, I think that is making it a little bit harder. I do have kids who are worrying a lot about getting sick and their parents getting sick. But I think actually with the new rules for staying at home, I think that's actually going to help them feel a little bit better and safer. Mm-hmm. So it's been kind of a spectrum of some kids doing a lot better and some kids doing slightly worse than they were when we were doing sessions in person. So it's been kind of a variety.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine a parent at home with a child who has ADD. I mean, the challenges that could come with that, especially if a child has some hyperactivity component to their ADHD. I mean, what are there certain exercises or certain, I know it's very case dependent, but, you know, kind of words of wisdom to impart to parents about how to deal with a child who might be very active and, you know, is not getting a lot of their energy out outside.
Absolutely. So one thing that I've been recommending to parents is really doing a lot of scheduling. And this is true for all parents, not just mm-hmm. parents of kids with ADHD or teens with ADHD. I think what I've been describing for scheduling is that it creates a sense of normalcy, and the structure actually really guides kids and teens to know what they're supposed to be doing, to give them some direction and to make them feel productive. And I think those are mm-hmm. things that are really important for adults too. So I've been trying my best to do that personally, but I've really been encouraging parents of my patients to make sure that they have an outline of a schedule at least for their kids, and that perhaps it's in a visual format that is readily accessible. So I would suggest making a loose schedule, or if you want to be more specific, that's fine too, but at least a loose schedule and putting it maybe on the refrigerator, or if you have several children who have different schedules, putting those on their bedroom door or the back of their bedroom door so that they can access them whenever they need them. One of my other suggestions was to actually have a visual of your own schedule so that for older kids and teens who are able to kind of follow along on a visual written schedule for you, they know when you have some free time and can help them, and they know kind of when to, and you know, quote unquote, do not disturb mode for parents who, you know, need to do conference calls or are busy getting things done at their work from home situation. So I think for the kids with ADHD, kind of looping back to that thought, scheduling is huge. And in your scheduling, to include a lot of physical activity. So mm-hmm. the CDC recommends that we have kids get about an hour of physical activity per day. And really without PE and recess and, you know, extracurricular sports, there are a lot of missed opportunities right now for physical activity. So it's really important that we're actually scheduling those into their day, maybe getting outside, getting some sunlight and dribbling a basketball or doing some jump roping. You know, we can't really go to parks right now, so it's going to be kind of a little bit more difficult, but we can be a little bit creative with it. I know that there are a lot of online resources right now. One of my kids just suggested a site called Go Noodle, which apparently has a lot of great exercises for kids to do, and they can do them inside as well.
Okay. What do you, I think a lot of parents are lax at this point on the screen time that they allow their kids, because it allows parents to be able to maybe work from home or give parents a little bit of a break. I think in normal times, parents were very focused on, okay, how am I going to create some sort of model that allows my kid to understand, you know, how much screen time is appropriate? How am I going to monitor it? I think it's a little bit different at this point.
Yeah. So what I've been telling parents is that, okay, first of all, this is crazy times for everyone. This is unprecedented. We don't really know what to expect or how long this is going to last. So it's okay that for this first week or two, things are a little bit more flexible. But I think going forward, since this is presumably going to take a little while for things to go back to normal, we actually do need to set boundaries for those things. And research actually shows that kids are getting about 6 hours per day of non-educational content in a normal day, in a normal time. So that is a lot of screen time. And that especially with our kids, yeah, crazy. So with our kids now being on their screens for educational time too, a lot of them at least, you know, with their FaceTime classes, some of the schools are doing online school. So they're going to be on the screens practically all day already. So I think there actually is, I have motivation to support my patients and parents in reducing the screen time to about what they would normally get on a weekday. So kind of my rule of thumb is that this isn't a break. This isn't vacation. This is still technically school. So if it's a virtual school day, it's a school day, and those weekday rules do apply. What I would say is that, you know, some of these rules can be a little bit more flexible and some of them should be a little bit stricter. And it totally depends on your child and your ability to limit set with them and whether they're pushing on those boundaries. But what I have suggested is kind of thinking about what your normal rule is and going with that, with the opportunity for the child to add additional time as a reward for good behavior. So we're kind of setting it up as contingent on a desired behavior, such as being able to do their own schoolwork without your support, or leaving you be so that you can do your own work from home, or even helping with chores and things around the house. So I think using it as a reward in about 10 to 20 minute increments is a really great choice for parents who want their child to be able to have a little bit more screen time to distract them and be able to get their own things done, while also making it more likely that these kids are engaging in those desired behaviors anyway. So I think that is a really good choice for parents who are kind of grappling with, okay, well, I need to have them on the screen for some part of time so that I can get stuff done myself.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, with even my own kids, I realize the more they have screen time, the more dysregulated they are to get off when they to get off of it.
Totally.
So it's always so tricky. It's a different time. You know, yeah. Moving on to thinking about kids and anxiety. I mean, every adult is anxious at this moment. I'm assuming every adult is anxious. There's so much to think about, so much unknown. How do we protect our children from that?
So I think one really important piece here is for parents to manage their own emotions when they're with their children. I think what kids are going to remember about this time period is not necessarily what they're doing. Like, it's not going to be, oh, did my mom go on Pinterest and pick a perfect activity for me? Like, it's not going to be like that. It's going to be more like, did my mom help me feel safe and supported during this time? Did my dad give me those coping skills, help me with coping skills to be able to manage my own anxiety? And are they keeping calm? Because kids are totally reading your emotions. And if you're super dysregulated and having trouble functioning, then they're going to be dysregulated as well. And obviously, this is easier said than done. But I actually think some of the other recommendations, like making sure you have a schedule, are really going to help with you feeling regulated and being able to keep calm, and which will better serve your children. So I think also one thing that I've really been stressing in my webinar, and I talk about it quite a bit, is that parents need to be engaging in self-care and relaxation as well. So obviously, it's a little bit difficult in these times to spare some time because you're, you know, you have mounting responsibilities, you're trying to work from home, you're managing your kids, you're having to cook every night. So it's a lot of responsibilities, but if you can reserve 15 to 20 minutes to be able to engage in your own self-care activity, and that looks different for everybody. So that could be painting your nails, taking a bath, reading a good book, doing a yoga class online, like whatever it is that you enjoy that makes you feel kind of content and relaxed is going to be a good choice for you. And so I think when we're thinking of managing our kids' emotions, we have to think a lot about managing our own emotions.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I was, as you were saying that, my child just came in the room and I had to figure out how to balance everything. And I just turned on a TV show. But so, yeah, you know, the other thing I'm thinking about is, you know, the news and how, you know, I think I've noticed when I have some time and I just check out the news, I find myself being really, you know, anxious and unsettled. And I think this idea of having news, I mean, clearly, I think parents are trying hard to not have news sources kind of open on their computers or the news on the TV at all times. I mean, it seems like it would be so hard for kids to be able to regulate themselves if they were exposed to that sort of thing. But I think the other thing to think about is how do we talk about it with our kids? I mean, they know they're home. We want to be honest with them. They hear things from their friends. Any ideas of how to frame it?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So just to kind of touch on what you just mentioned about exposure to all of these news stories, I think it's really important that we are all limiting our exposure to news coverage. I know that personally, my husband has been updating me really frequently about what's going on. And mm-hmm. every time it kind of makes me a little bit more and more nervous. And so really what I've been suggesting is limiting the amount of time that you are on those news sources and really focusing on getting the information that you need from a credible source and then shutting it off. So I actually think social media at this time is kind of not really helping things. And there's a lot of alarmist content and a lot of false statements and misinformation being spread. So I think, you know, limiting our time, and I've had parents saying that they are making sure that they are off of those sources by 9 p.m. because it's disrupting their sleep otherwise. So I think those are all great ideas. But in terms of talking to your children about it, I think there's a few important things to remember. So I think being honest about this is a really great way to be. I think you need to frame it honestly, but in an age-appropriate way. And they don't need all of the details. They don't need to know what's happening across the world. They need to know what's happening in their home. So what I have done is created a social story for my younger patients. So from about, it's actually from daycare to second grade. And it essentially explains in a really child-friendly way it explains the situation that's going on right now in a really child-friendly way. So kind of talking about, okay, this is what's happening right now. This is how we're dealing with it. We're staying home and that we are safe and that if we do get sick, we know what to do. So I think that's going to be the most critical component is being able to communicate to children that they are safe and especially like why staying at home keeps them safe. For older kids, NPR really recently came out with a really great comic that I think is a good resource. And so I have these resources linked on my website, which I think Josephine is going to...
It'll be on.
Yeah, post a link to. So if you need that resource, that will be on there. But I think those are some good ways to talk about it. I don't think you need to pressure your child to talk about it. So if they're kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah, mom, whatever. Don't press it. They don't need to know everything that's going on. You don't have to have a conversation about this, but be open to responding to those questions, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in an age appropriate way.
Right.
It's a timeline.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, do you treat obsessive compulsive disorder in children?
I do. Mm-hmm.
I've been wondering about that quite a bit, right? Because at this point for kids who have compulsions to wash, right?
Yeah.
And hand washing or counting or other compulsions, how are they doing?
So I have actually found that some of my anxious patients in general have been faring pretty well with this, this kind of chaotic time. They've been faring pretty well. And I think, you know, they've probably imagined the worst. So this doesn't compare to what they've imagined still. So I think actually a lot of people with anxiety are doing pretty well. But certainly there are some kids who are having worse compulsions. And I've also found that some people with anxiety, because their overall anxiety is heightened, their specific anxieties or phobias are also heightened. So people worrying about their relationships or like their phobias, it's kind of increased. But for our kids with OCD, I do think that there have been some kids who are washing more and have been kind of on high germ alert more than they maybe usually would have been. But for that, I think, you know, just following your therapist's suggestions regarding exposure and response prevention, which is the type of treatment we use for OCD. So let me explain that a little bit. So exposure and response prevention is a type of CBT in which we create a hierarchy, so kind of a list in order of what would be the worst thing to expose the person to, what would be the scariest thing to expose them to the least scary. And so right now, if not allowing them to have time to wash their hands is getting higher and higher on their hierarchy, then that's one that we are not working on right now. And we're going to focus more on the ones that are kind of in what I call, quote unquote, the working zone. So those are the ones that sometimes the child's able to beat or talk back to OCD. And so we're going to focus on those and the child being confident with those rather than focusing on ones that are getting a little bit more out of control right now. So I think, you know, we kind of have to be compassionate with these kids and understanding that everybody wants to wash their hands more right now, which is great. It's really helping us stay safe and not get sick. And so if that gets a little out of control for our kids with OCD, that's okay. Like, let's be compassionate about it. Help them, prompt them to do their coping skills, prompt them to do their exposures, but take it with a grain of salt that, you know, this is a weird time right now.
Right. What about kids who didn't have any sort of pre-existing phobias or obsessive thoughts or compulsive behaviors, but parents are starting to notice those come up in the context of just kind of a high anxiety time. Any suggestions to those parents about how to approach that?
Yeah, I think that would be a very normal thing to happen. And so what we want to think about is whether their anxiety is what I call a false alarm or whether it's a real alarm. So is there actually danger there? If there is danger, such as exposure to these germs, then their anxious behavior is reasonable. And we want everyone to have a bit of anxiety or a bit of fear. Otherwise, we wouldn't be protected from danger at all. So I think allowing them to have these feelings and not trying to suppress them and validating these experiences and these emotions is really, really important. And if you're thinking that it's getting to a really worrisome level, making sure that you are engaging them in some self-care, relaxation skills. Also, there's lots of coping skill ideas on the internet that they can access. And also, if it's getting really bad, consulting with a therapist or a psychologist about what they can do to kind of head those off. Because obviously we don't want those to continue. We want to kind of give the kids skills, build those skills up and reinforce them while this is going on so that, you know, it doesn't get a lot worse.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard about children having, you know, more spider phobias amongst just my social groups and things like that, of these new phobias just popping up, which, I mean, I guess it's a way for kids to be, I mean, it's just part of what you would expect in these times.
Yeah, it's also interesting to see, you know, our kids with social phobias are having a really easy time right now, and they actually need to be continuing their work if they are working with a therapist to reduce their social phobia, I think it's really important that they continue working on it however they can. So that might
mean,
So that might mean making sure that they are FaceTiming with other kids in their class, maybe even setting up a FaceTime with an adult, like an unknown adult who is in their parents' social circle, so that they are still meeting people technically. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit different. But if you guys are if you guys are getting takeout and you're ordering it via phone, if that's an option, having the kid actually call and make that phone call and do the order. So there's ways to be creative with all of these exposures, certainly, in this time. And it's really important that kids continue to see their therapist and work together with them to come up with those exposures. For example, I have a kid with a dog phobia right now who we're like, okay, how are we going to possibly do this? Because they cannot access a dog right now. so we're having to get creative. You know, we can use videos, we can use pictures, we can do imaginal exposure, which is just kind of guiding the child to imagine what the fear that they're facing. And this is a, you know, this is a type of exposure we use regularly, not just in times like these, but it can be especially useful right now.
Right. Yeah, just this thought about, and because I know you work with a lot of autism spectrum disorders, and it that takes a lot of work in behavioral therapy and intervention. And it's really hard, I'm sure, for parents with children with autism spectrum disorders to feel confident that their child is continuing the work that they worked so hard on. You know, and so it's kind of, I like that you suggested that or encouraged that that children should still keep up with their therapy as much as they possibly can, even though they're at home and possibly, you know, more isolated than usual, because, you know, they're going to have to pick it back up.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think for those kids, there are ABA, Applied Behavior Analysis agencies that are doing teletherapy. But I think a big component of it right now is going to be encouraging the parents to do their best in keeping up the objectives that you guys are working on. It's obviously easier said than done. So I think reaching out for support from the ABA agencies or a behavioral therapist or a psychologist like myself for parent training in this time is a really great choice. And personally, you know, I'm still able to do my parent training because I'm having parents take data. And so this is what I'm doing in my normal practice as well, is like the parents are taking data about what's going on. I have a specific way for them to take data. And then without even seeing the child, I'm able to offer helpful suggestions on how to intervene. And I think, you know, the ABA therapists are going to be able to do one-on-one sessions with the older kids or the kids who are able to do that and have that attention span to be able to engage with that. But if not, then they can give the parents tips on how to run programs and keep up the good work that they've been doing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think with what you've talked about, this idea that all of this has to be approached with an element of flexibility and compassion.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, parents cannot, you know, there's so much now we have to juggle at home. And I mean, there are some good things about being at home too, but this idea that you just try your best, right? And you do the best you can. And, you know, there might be some times where you're not going to get it right. And you're going to put your kid in front of a screen if you have to. You know, they're not going to get exactly, or this idea that there might be times that a parent is feeling anxious, and your child might see that. And that's just okay. Right.
Yep.
We try our hardest to kind of try to be able to create a safe environment. But sometimes, you know, you're going to just feel so dysregulated as a parent that it's just your kid is going to see that. And right. This idea that, you know, forgiving yourself for that sometimes is all you can do and just move on.
Right. And I also think like having communication with your friends and your support system And if you have a partner or spouse, making sure that you guys are ranting to one another when you're having stressful moments, and trying your best to hide that from the kids. But obviously they're going to see that, and it's okay. Ultimately, what you want to do is make sure that they're understanding how you're feeling and why. So communicating that is also really important. So saying something like, you know, mommy's feeling really anxious right now because I don't know what's going to happen with my work. That is a reasonable thing to say to, you know, a child who's maybe 6 and up. They're going to understand that, and they're going to see that you're not perfect and that this is a learning experience for everybody, and that, you know, parents make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. So it's a good lesson for your child to see that, you know, you're not perfect as well, so that they don't expect themselves to be perfect.
Right. Yeah. So before we end, can you tell us just a little bit more info about your webinar? Because as I'm listening to you as a parent myself, I'm thinking, okay, I got to listen to this webinar because I got to figure out some better tools to kind of make things run more smoothly. But tell us about how it's offered and how people can access it.
Sure. So you just register on Eventbrite, and there is a link on all of my social media and on my website, which Josephine's going to link. And so the main topics are self-care for parents, setting limits, but allowing for choices, taking some space, staying on a schedule. Sleep is a huge component. So that one's really big on, and I'm really passionate about sleep, which sounds funny, but it's one of the first things that I actually work on with kids in therapy, is making sure that their sleep is regulated. So I have a whole section on sleep, feeling anxious and what to do, and then going within the same vein as cognitive behavioral therapy, thinking about how powerful thoughts are and what to do about that. So those are kind of the main content topics. And I also provide a handout for parents that can be distributed to their friends and families, so that if they have people who aren't able to attend the webinar for time reasons or financial reasons, that they can still access that information. And great. I think what's really helpful about the webinar is I give you practical tips on what to do and some of the language of, you know, kind of the best way to phrase things or to communicate things to your child. So it's not like lofty goals. It's really more like, let's get down to business. These are practical tips of what you can be doing. So I think I've gotten really good feedback about it so far. It's just a Zoom webinar. And so you'll join like you join a Zoom meeting, and I will provide the link once you register. So it's an easy way to get some additional information and resources in a little bit less than an hour, and feel kind of like you are getting resources from a credible source that's based on research. I think that's really important in these times.
Right. Are participants able to ask questions?
So I ask for them to submit questions when they register. And then there the last few webinars, there has been a little bit of extra time for questions as well.
Okay. Well, that's really a great resource to know about. I will make sure that it's linked on the podcast site so parents know how to access that and learn a little bit more about that. Hillary, I was very grateful that you were able to take time out of your busy schedule these days to talk with us about this important topic. And I hope soon we can get back to talking about other things, like, you know, more specifics about Asperger's and treatment of Asperger's and autism spectrum disorders. But for now, I think this is, you know, I think really helpful. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I hope everybody is hanging in there. And don't forget to ask for support if you need it. It's not, there's no shame in asking for help. So we all need to be doing that, relying on our social support at this point.
I agree. All right. Well, take care of yourself.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.